Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of The Damage Report with me, John Iadarola, and Jer Jackson. Welcome to the show, Jer.
What's going on?
All good stuff, all good news, very happy and positive about the state of the country, the state of the world.
We're coming in with a good, happy show. It's a good Wednesday.
We are. We're gonna start off with a little bit of fun, not like objective fun, like there's that video of the dog, I think his name is Verb, who did amazing at one of these dog agility courses going around, went viral. Super happy news, great. It's not that kind of fun.
This is the bulldog? Like,
No, I think it's some other type. Oh, maybe it was
the little white dog, right?
Yeah, I think so.
I love that dog.
Yeah. So that's just objective fun. I've got our country's falling apart fun for you in just a little bit. Lots more to get to later on the show. Howard Schultz had a town hall that he never should have had, but he'd had it, and so we learned about him, and we're gonna break down some more reasons why he should not run for the presidency, and you should never ever support him in any way. And then we also have two awesome guests are gonna be joining us. On the latter half of the show, Jules Zaltsev is gonna be back on the show once again, friend of The Damage Report, breaking down some of the most recent news on the Green New Deal, a number of other topics. Should be a lot of fun. Actually, just in the next block, stick around because Sarah Kendzior, author and podcaster, is gonna be joining us to talk about the latest on the Robert Mueller investigation, Roger Stone, all of that BS that we have to deal with. What is actually going to happen? She's gonna help break that down from her expert opinion. And with that, why don't we launch into one of the most enraging, nonsensical topics that we've covered in quite a while. Donald Trump doesn't have a lot really working in his favor as a human, like physically or mentally. But he does benefit right now from one of the most absurd cults of personality that I have seen in my life. And I wanna give you some more examples of how exactly this works. The ridiculous North Korean lengths people will go to in their admiration for Donald Trump. So he gave his speech earlier this week in El Paso about the border wall. Before he gave that speech, we already knew that everything he'd said about El Paso and crime before and after they installed the equivalent of a wall that they have was totally 100% untrue. We're not gonna go through the facts again on the show because that had already been done many times. But he doesn't like that because he thought that he had a winner with El Paso. So damn the facts, he presses forward. He says, I spoke to people that have been here a long time. They said that when a wall went up, it's a whole different ball game. Is that a correct statement? The crowd cheered. Now understand, when he says, is that a correct statement? He's not asking like the chief of police over the past decade or people who studied crime trends in El Paso. He's asking his audience and they love it. He's acknowledging there that people disagree with him on what actually is going on in El Paso historically, and they don't care. They cheer.
There's a disdain for facts. It's been building for a long time in the country. We talked about how deplorable scholars are, and look at that uppity, angry Princeton legal professor. Mm-hmm. It's a bad thing to be smart. It's a bad thing to have thoughts. It's a bad thing to have facts and figures behind your argument. Mm-hmm. Your argument has to be, A, it agrees with what makes me feel good. Ironically, they talk about people's thoughts and feelings not meaning anything, but everything that they're cheering and advocating for is simply based off of their feelings. Mm-hmm. And if facts are in the way, they're like, well, those people must be getting paid. Okay, the scientists on global warming are getting paid. The intel officials are getting paid to say things about foreign countries that are against what President Trump wants to be said about them. Okay, they're getting paid. Everybody's getting paid from who? Mm-hmm. And then show me those tax returns from mm-hmm. them getting paid. Or maybe show me the pay stubs. Mm-hmm. You know so much. Show me something that tells me everyone is getting paid to just say, to throw blatant lies around about your president. But mm-hmm. in reality, there's actually payments going to him and things that benefit him monetarily to say these things and do these things and promote himself.
Well, and the interesting thing in this particular case, and one of the reasons that I'm so fired up about this is that all of what you just said is true. The anti-expert, anti-science, anti-teacher stuff, Don Jr. was calling teachers losers. Like, and as I tweeted this morning, if you are opposed to teachers, like you might have taken a wrong turn at some point. But it's not just that. It goes beyond just the libs are lying to you. Now it's anyone other than Donald Trump. So it wasn't just libs who were saying, well, you know, in El Paso, actually crime was going down long before they put up the wall. And actually murders went up slightly after the wall. By the way, not because of the wall, it just had no effect. They actually don't even care. It would be Republicans as well, they don't believe it. So he said, I don't care whether a mayor is a Republican or a Democrat, he scoffed, referring to El Paso Mayor Dee Margo, a Republican who had tried to correct the president. That was a futile effort if ever there was one. They're full of crap when they say it hasn't made a big difference. He went on, I heard the same thing from the fake news. They said, oh, crime actually stayed the same. Didn't stay the same. It went way down. These people, you know, you'd think they want to get to the bottom of a problem, not try and pull the wool over everybody's eyes. Those last two sentences, by the way, that is the most clear projection that you that should be in textbooks. He has been told by the experts, by the chief, by the police officers, who the mayor, who's a Republican, doesn't believe any of it, wants to pull the wool over your eyes because he wants a wall. And they just cheer boriously. There's like, they're so far past even just doublethink. It's just, you know what? Whatever this guy says is true. And we've got the stats to back it up as well. This stuff is honestly kind of scary once we get to the latter half. In the beginning, this is perhaps not as surprising. So a poll last year, how many of the statistics reported by the government are reliable and accurate? Most people who had voted for Hillary Clinton in 2016 said most government figures were accurate. Only 15% of Trump voters agreed. Half of Trump voters said they trusted little to none of the government's figures. And I show you that graphic, not because you should just accept whatever the government says, but if you're going to say that the government is lying about how many murders there were, how many immigrants came around the border, at least present an argument as to why that is. Going into it saying the government is obviously lying about literally everything is insanity. And that is what is driving a significant percentage of the entire country's political thoughts.
And it's odd because suddenly the government just started lying about everything. All these facts and figures, murder rates, and all this, right? So when W was in office, he was the head of the government. Mm-hmm. And they lied about things that got us into wars. Mm-hmm. I remember that. But they believed those government figures, mm-hmm, that they were later proven to be absolutely wrong. After Colin Powell was in front of a hearing and put together this evidence that was BS. I almost said it. So when that happens, it's okay. So there's nobody, I don't know, I wish there was these people in the media that would say, hey, you know what? Remember when you guys didn't believe government, or did believe government, and now you don't? Mm-hmm. But it switched only based off of this one guy. This is a case study in a cult. Mm-hmm. And we've mentioned how it's pretty cult-like, but it's not even well-run cult. Uh-huh. At least well-run cults have you believing in something higher than just the person there, and then eventually that deity is placed into that body. This is just the guy who bumbles through things, and mm-hmm, I'm still trying to find out what it is about him that is so appealing. At least there's a cult leader who says, hey, you know what? I'm giving you this. We all live in this one small compound together, mm-hmm, and all of your needs are taken care of. He's screwing the people over, mm-hmm, that are believing everything he says.
Yeah. I just saw today more and more farmers are declaring bankruptcy after his trade wars launched. Here's the thing. All of what we just showed you is all really good, should scare people. But we have saved the best for last. We've got two more things for you. Thank you for sticking around. This one. So not do you trust scientists, do you trust teachers, do you trust the libs, all of that. Obviously, they're not going to. Fine. So here is a far harder bar for a cult of personality to be able to get past. In last July, there was an NPR poll that asked, who do you trust more, your favorite news source or Donald Trump? So hold on, come back to me for a second. I want to be very clear about what they're asking there. They're not saying, do you trust the BBC? Do you trust the Washington Post? Those bastards at the New York Times. If you're a Republican, you are going to answer that based on who do you trust more? Fox News or Donald Trump? You've been following Fox News for 20 years now at this point, 30 years maybe. Who do you trust more? Breitbart or Donald Trump? Who do you trust more? Alex Jones or Donald Trump? These people that you really believe are getting to the truth where the rest of the media is ignoring it. And on that, while voters as a whole trust their favorite news source over Trump, 62-29, Trump supporters choose the president, 65-24, and amongst Republicans, it's 70%. 70% of Republican Trump supporters are like, Fox News is a bunch of lying fake news BSers. Donald Trump has got the real truth.
And he gets it from where? That's always
he gets it from Fox News.
Yeah, next thing. Question is, where do you think he gets that information from? Mm-hmm. Is Donald Trump floating over the entire existence of America and he sees all?
Yeah.
He's a god to them.
And here is the ultimate example of that. So forget all the stuff about Fox News. Okay, they've moved on. They don't even trust right-wing media anymore. Last May, Economist YouGov survey asked, do you think Donald Trump has or has not ever lied to the American people? 19% of US adults says he has never lied. Among Trump supporters, 40%. So when you see a crowd of red hats Almost half of them believe that Donald Trump, a man who is facing, I think, 5,800 individual fact checks on PolitiFact and Washington Post, all that stuff, has never, ever lied. He's never been dishonest. That is a belief that is not true of literally anyone on this entire planet. Your grandmother has lied to you. The Dalai Lama has lied to you. I don't care. AOC, at one point, big liar. I don't know exactly on what yet, but we'll find out. Everyone has lied. Donald Trump has certainly lied, possibly more than anyone else in the world. And half of them believe that he has never lied. And what comes after that? Maybe he bowled a 300. Maybe he has never once played golf without getting a hole in one and everything. This is North Korean dictatorship Absolutely. Beliefs. There is nothing differentiating this from that. And that's half of his supporters. That is 15 to 20% of the country.
I'm gonna ask Emma the next time she's at one of these rallies and say, did you hear about when Trump bowled that 300 and see how many people believe it?
Exactly. What can you get them to think is true about Donald Trump? Anyway, I'm sorry. I saw this stuff last night and it just scares me going forward to imagine what is going to happen. Like, as members of the media, we want to correct his false statements. We want to reveal the truth. We have a segment, Myths of American Politics. I have been wasting my time for a significant portion of this country because they will never, ever believe that something bad could be true of their deity. Okay, unfortunately, we do have to stop for now. We're going to take a short break. We come back, Sarah Kendzior is going to be joining us, author, podcaster. She is going to shed light on what's been going on the Mueller investigation after this.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, you must unlearn what you have learned. And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
We're in what feels like year 73 of the Mueller investigation, and if he has any intention of eventually revealing what he's found, he's not really making that clear at this point. But that doesn't mean that there haven't been developments in the case. And joining us now to help break that down, author of The View from Flyover Country and host of Gaslit Nation, Sarah Kendzior, welcome to The Damage Report.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Very glad to have you here. And so let's start with some of the more recent developments in the investigation. Roger Stone, one of the figures to be targeted by that investigation most recently, don't know exactly how the charges against him are going to shake out. Based on what you've seen of his communication since then, the judge talking about potentially putting a gag order on him, what do you think Roger Stone's role ultimately in this will be?
I mean, Roger Stone's role is huge. Roger Stone has been a colleague of Trump for 40 years. He's been tied to Manafort and other players of this investigation for 40 years. And he's been involved in dirty and illegal political tricks for his entire career and should have been arrested a long time ago. He absolutely needs, at the least, a gag order, because one of the things I worry people aren't considering is that every single indictee or person under investigation in this case is now armed with national security information, with classified classified intelligence that they've procured from Trump, or from others. And they're working against the interests of the United States and working against individuals, blackmailing them, threatening them. They're able to do that a lot more efficiently with this information. So yes, he needs a gag order and he needs, house arrest. He needs to be contained instead of put on like CNN every night.
Yeah, you see him on CNN. He's still hosting shows on Alex Jones's network, like nothing bad is going on. And we know that when in previous cases with Michael Cohen and others who've pled guilty or been sentenced, Donald Trump feels very free to go on Twitter and to threaten them before the sentencing, to imply that if they play along with him, perhaps there will be pardons. Roger Stone, as of right now, does not look worried at all. What do you think the likelihood is that in the end he will see even a day of jail?
It's hard for me to call that, but I agree with you that he doesn't seem worried at all. And I don't think anybody in this investigation seems particularly worried. And why should they be? There haven't been real consequences. Everyone has either walked, they've been charged for crimes that they committed, a decade ago, in some cases 2 decades ago, and they finally got around to it. Imagine if they had prosecuted white collar crime in real time. What kind of situation would we be in? Trump has confessed to obstruction of justice. He's doing witness tampering, as you just said. And there's been, no repercussions that protect the public. And that's my concern. This is not about partisanship. This is not about vengeance. This is about protecting the public from people who are actively trying to hurt them and hurt this country.
So we also have Michael Cohen, and we have this interesting dual case where I just read a report that he has done 80 hours worth of interviews with the Mueller team, and yet his testimony before Congress that was supposed to have already happened obviously was delayed over he said that he was concerned about Donald Trump targeting his family. It is potentially being delayed again. But we also know his history is as a paid liar. So when it comes to Michael Cohen, what do you think of all that?
Well, Michael Cohen was recently photographed at a fancy restaurant going out to dinner and didn't seem particularly afraid for his life or sick, as he had previously claimed. I think he's another one who feels, he feels confident. I don't understand, the reluctance to go forward. I don't understand how he'd be out in public but unable to testify. And I really don't understand why, Congress and others aren't being more forthright about what exactly is going on here. The Mueller probe is essentially striving to be leak free, and I respect that, but it's not the only avenue to accountability and justice. So I think that we need some more straightforward talk, like we've seen from Adam Schiff, about these kind of holdups that the Mueller probe has perhaps inadvertently caused.
And it certainly feels like the entire thing is one big holdup. I can't say with any certainty whether maybe the report drops on Friday. Maybe we hit 2020 without actually knowing. I don't know if those are equally likely, but I can't say for sure. If in the end his report is either not released publicly, or if it's blocked from being released at all, or massively redacted, or anything like that, or if he comes out and there's just enough that perhaps it's swept under the rug, nothing big is pushed for. I mean, we've normalized a lot over the past couple of years. What will your reaction be if one of those situations ends up being the end?
I mean, that's what I've been expecting, so I won't be surprised, but I think it's extremely unfortunate because the American people are owed an explanation. This is a transnational crime syndicate masquerading as a government. We are entitled to know what they're doing. We're entitled to know why. We're entitled to know what kind of effect it has in our daily lives. We are paying for these investigations. We are paying for these corrupt elected officials. And I've always thought that Trump's strategy would just be to, consolidate power while the clock runs out and to allow Mueller to complete the probe, because people would obviously react strongly if he outright banned it, but then have it have no utility, no effect, no prosecutions, no real consequences. I feel like anybody who's concerned with the welfare of this country should be thinking ahead, assuming that that's a probable outcome, and finding like plan B through plan Z. That's unfortunately what we need to do.
Sir, this is JR. Regarding the Mueller investigation, people talk about how close we're monitoring it and how much we're talking about it and wasting your time on it, and I can't believe you guys are following this so closely. I guess in your opinion, as you're following it, do you think it's more helpful or harmful that so much media attention is put on something like this investigation? Does Mueller and his team work better when they're doing it without so much constant updates on every step he takes? And oh my God, I think he might send this subpoena. And the next step, is that hurting the progress or slowing it down in any way?
I mean, there's a constructive way to talk about it, you know, which is, I think, to talk about corruption, to talk about kleptocracy, to talk about criminal impunity, to talk about the actual actions that have been threatening people in this country and what a criminal president has gotten away with. I think, you know, broadly, that's good. This kind of nonsense of like, ooh, today's indictment day, or ooh, today the report must be coming up, or is he wrapping up? Is he not? Like, who cares? Like, he's going to wrap up when he wraps up. Meanwhile, you have a structural problem. This did not all happen in 2016. These people have been at it for like 40 years. And so we need to look at the whole system. We need to look at what crimes they committed. Why weren't they, you know, brought to justice, if you can even call it that's happening now, being brought to justice? Why aren't they brought to justice earlier? What kind of processes of transparency and accountability are we owed as citizens? That's a more useful way, I think, to look at it than just to play a guessing game.
So while all of this is going on, one more question for you. We have the very beginnings of the interminable presidential election process. Each election goes on for 7 years, I think, at this point. I think we've made good progress on 2024 already. But you have an ever increasing field of candidates. To what extent, if any, do you think that talk either specifically about the Mueller investigation or about more checks on criminality in the White House should be a part of that primary process?
I think that a good candidate will recognize that you can't separate domestic politics from international politics, and that this is, you know, as I said before, a transnational alliance of criminals, of plutocrats, of oligarchs, of billionaires, you know, who are shaking people down and shaking down entire countries and stripping us of our democracy, our resources, our money, our freedom. It's all connected. And I think a successful candidate will be able to frame it that way. And you certainly see a lot of frustration among ordinary people about jobs, about the economy, and about criminal impunity and things like dark money and campaigns. You know, I think that's a more constructive way to talk about it rather than just, you know, narrowing it to the Mueller probe itself, but rather the broad problem of corruption and kleptocracy that it's embroiled in.
Sarah Kendzior, we appreciate you coming on the show, author of The View from Flyover Country, host of Gaslit Nation as well, a podcast available now. Thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you for having me.
We're going to take a short break. We come back, more news for you. For some reason in America, if you have enough money, you get town halls on CNN. So Howard Schultz, who is sort of running for president, but not even really running for president, and doesn't seem to be really aware that he's running for president, got a town hall. And although I understand even by talking about this at all, we are to some extent benefiting him, I think once you see what we have to say about him, you'll understand that he's probably not benefiting too much. So he was asked a bunch of questions and he gave things that are technically responses. Here is his response on a question about racial sensitivity and racism in America.
As somebody who grew up in a very diverse background as a young boy in the projects, I didn't see color as a young boy. And I honestly don't see color now. And I want to do everything I can in terms of the character and the dignity of what it means to be the president of the United States, is if I should run and be elected, that the Oval Office represents so much about the character of the nation, the morality of the nation.
So, didn't see race as a kid? Doesn't see race today. Hey, that's great. That means he's not a racist, right?
It's weird how that works. You better start seeing color because the rest of the world sees color. That's for damn sure. Every decision people make, hey, he was talking about that answer came in response to the problem that happened at one of the Starbucks when they were kicking black folks out and not allowing them in, and cops being called on them for coming by. Hey, some employees in some of the coffee shops that, that you're the head of, they see race. They saw it. And as you say, you're fixing it problem and you're addressing it, you have to be seeing race to fix it or else you're not addressing the problem. Mm-hmm. The whole I don't see race thing doesn't work. And I'm not sure how a guy who's made this much money and has advanced his career this far doesn't see that obvious fact. He hasn't seen anybody talk about how when someone says, I don't see race, that that's a losing argument.
I know.
You haven't seen that yet? You haven't noticed? You haven't noticed that means you're clueless or that you're trying to escape around actual evidence of you seeing plenty of color?
Yeah.
I haven't seen it as a kid. You know what? He said, I grew up in a diverse background, the projects. You know what diverse background means in political terms?
Mm-hmm.
Minorities. Mm-hmm. So that diverse background, you're talking about the black folks or maybe Latinos you grew up around. That means you saw them. Mm-hmm. Did they look like white folks to you? Mm-hmm. I'm not sure which one it is. Like, you can't say, hey, I grew up around all these minorities. I know what's up. I'm in the streets, fool. You can't say that. And then after that, say, I don't see it. You just saw it your whole life. You just told us about how you saw it.
I'm glad he did not say, I'm in the streets, fool. I'm glad. Don't do that, Howard Schultz. Look,
that's
I know.
Coming next.
This is very frustrating to hear if you have questionable views on race. And correct me if I'm wrong, but the only people who say, I can't be racist, I've got black friends, or I can't be racist, I don't even see race, are people with questionable views on race. Like, it's not like, I don't think a lot of people who are non-white are like, yes, this dude gets it. And that is not new. It's not new. I don't see race was a joke on an episode of The Office. How do you not know this at this point? If my goal, for some reason, perversely, was like, secretly I'm a racist, and I kind of want to let them know without saying it directly, I'd be like, I have many black friends. You should know this at that point. If you don't know that, then you definitely have questionable views on race at the very best.
I'm not a racist. Hey, I use the N-word around my black friends all the time, and they don't have a problem with it.
Oh my God. That's the third one, actually, I think, for a certain type of person. Okay, so seems a little bit tone deaf and ignorant on what should be a softball, but okay, we'll move on. So let's get into policy. What does he want to see done on the environment? We've got the Green New Deal, very popular new program. He's not a fan of it necessarily. Let's see his ideas to replace it.
When I read the proposed bill in terms of the Green New Deal, and I read that by 2030, they're suggesting that every building in America becomes clean energy, conforms to clean energy. Just to put that in perspective, because it's not realistic, that would mean that between 2,000 and 3,000 buildings a day would have to be reconstructed to conform to what they're saying. So let's be sensible about what we're suggesting. Let's not just throw stuff against a wall because it's a good slogan or we get a press release. Let's be truthful. And if there's one thing that I'm trying to do tonight, more than anything else, is tell you what I believe, tell you what I believe is true, and speak to you from my heart for someone who loves the country, who has benefited tremendously from the promise of the country and wants to see that continue. But when I see politicians start throwing things out that I know is not realistic, that is not being honest with the American people.
Okay, so hey, let me just note, the way he was communicating there, he's had a tremendous amount of media coverage now for over a week at this point. It's like 10 days or something like that. It feels like a year. Has he presented one argument as to why he is a better candidate than literally any other rich person wearing a suit?
Like, none.
You could put anyone up there and they would do that well and no better.
He's able to continue the filibuster move of most politicians. He's able to continue talking, and then when the moderator, in this case, sometimes the anchor, tries to interrupt and ask a follow-up question, he just continues talking. Yeah, he pulls that off really well. And saying all the same normal things that politicians say. He's, after talking about how truthful we have to be on everything true and make things normal and true, he goes, I'm up here to say things that I believe are true. Is it true or is it what you believe is true? Because, you know, there's a way to find actual truth without saying I believe it's true. Hey, somebody told me the sky is red and, you know, I believe it's true, so it must kind of be true. Which one is it? There's evidence here.
You know, he also said, I don't think that my time as head of Starbucks is a qualification for the presidency. I think what he's trying to say is that, like, Trump was unqualified because all he did was have a career in business. But Howard, if your time as the head of Starbucks is not a qualification, what possible qualification do you have? Maybe I listed one. You own a suit. Other than that, what does anyone know about him other than he was the head of Starbucks? Like, he hasn't served in elected office? He's an inventor, a philosopher, a great author? What other possible argument do you have for you to be considered qualified to assume the presidency at this point?
I get a bit of his argument saying that you have to be realistic in the things you propose. But I think in the case of you trying to propose something new and different that we've never done before, it's okay to have goals. There's an apartment building going up right by my place. And there's a big banner up front that says, coming January 2019. It's been up there since last year. guess what month it is in 2019 right mm-hmm. now? It's February, mid-February, and that building is not open yet. It's a thing
I think
that,
I know what you're talking about.
It's a thing that happens sometimes
yeah.
where construction and things that people have goals to get something done to make things better don't meet the goals because sometimes things slow down or sometimes you have things go around it. But it doesn't mean they should have never broken ground.
Mm-hmm.
It mean they should never put anything in that place.
Yeah.
No, they do it anyway because you're going to get there.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, we don't have time to go in depth, but I will. Maybe we'll return to it. But let's say you had a plan to, you're not going to rebuild every building, you moron. You put some solar panels on it. But let's say you wanted to rebuild it or whatever from the ground up. Okay, you aim to replace every one in 10 years. Let's say you don't make that. What's the worst case scenario if you don't make all of them on renewable energy? Okay? I guess they don't all have renewable energy, but presumably a lot would. That seems better. So your response is, let's not even try. Let's give up. Let's be sensible and lay down on the ground and let the ocean water wash over us. That I would love to say that I guess I'm being unfair and we should instead give, you know, serious attention and thought to his proposal. But you just saw his proposal. There's no proposal. There's no details. On the Green New Deal, on taxes, on all of this, he apparently was blindsided last week finding out that he was running for the presidency because he does not have a single idea to run on. And unfortunately, although he only has a 4% approval rating, literally amongst Democrats, Republicans, or independents, some people in polls say they intend to vote for him. It's not going to be a lot. He will not win the presidency. He doesn't have a path to win one single vote in the Electoral College, and that take my word for it. We'll check back in, see if I was wrong. Will not change between now and election day for the presidency of 2020. But he might get enough votes to change how some electoral votes are allocated. That is my concern.
Yeah.
Beyond that, he has nothing to offer. But that is pretty significant.
I feel like he can't believe that he does have something to offer. He knows that.
Yeah.
He knows he's not going to win.
Well, we're going to return to his thoughts on the reaction to him running on the other side of this. Jules Sosdaltsev is going to be joining us to break down not only a little bit on Howard Schultz, but some other big news that's been going on around the country after this. Joining the show now to help break down some of the big news out there, friend of the show, Jules Sosdaltsev. Jules, welcome back to the show.
Heyo, I'm back.
always good to have you here. Resident big fancy journalist, Jules. Always
Thank
good.
Thank you.
So we're not done bashing Howard Schultz just yet. So he
Thank God.
He had his town hall and he attacked the Green New Deal. He provided nothing to replace it. And that feels to me like a lot of the sort of counterattack to the Green New Deal. It's, oh, you crazy kids. What do you think about that as a tactic? That rather than saying, no, here's what needs to be done, it's just you guys are the worst.
I mean, because, the reason they're doing that is kind of obvious. It's that most people, you know, most people support like AOC 70% tax on millionaires. Most people support the Green New Deal. Like this is a popular position that I think a lot of people have been waiting for that the right doesn't have a real response to. So they just call like, they call AOC stupid. They say the deal would never work. They make up stuff about it. It's just a lot of this like, very thin layered propaganda because there's nothing else there. And Howard Schultz is like really funny because he also has nothing to offer, but he's also not good at BSing in the way that like a lot of these right wing hosts are, at least to like their own base, but he doesn't have a base to BS to. And then he also just isn't good at it.
Yeah.
So it's really actually kind of funny watching him flounder and have nothing to respond to a really good idea.
Yeah, earlier today, Brett Ehrlich said that he has all the substance of cappuccino foam. And I think that that's mostly true. So as you were saying, some of these policies he's attacking now are very popular. I've seen recent polls that show that millennials support the Green New Deal at like 70-80%.
Yeah.
All other generations are also majority support, close to that, not quite as high as the millennials. And I know that Mitch McConnell wants to embarrass Democratic senators by holding a vote on the Green New Deal, which we know is incredibly popular. What do you think about that as a tactic to shame the left?
I feel like Mitch McConnell does stuff like this all the time. He does a lot of like blustery threats about stuff he knows won't work because he's never going to go through with it. It's all just another talking point. It all feels like he's trying to run out the clock. And at this point, I don't know what he's running out the clock for, except maybe like for Trump to make another tweet and move the conversation along and then try to like bully his way like internally, because that's what McConnell is really good at, is using Trump as like this wall to, you know, push all of these ideas against that, where, you know, like with the shutdown, like with with like Kavanaugh, with all of these proposals that he wants to push through, he's good at internal politicking. But this like external, like I said, like blustering threats doesn't mean anything. Like, obviously he's not going to put it to a vote to shame Democrats because he knows that the support is there.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting if it does happen. I know that it has a number of Democratic co-sponsors right now. So based on your experience, you're a political communicator. If you were helping to direct AOC and others, often I will use her, but there's a lot of politicians who are part of these conversations around taxation, about dealing with climate change. Based on what you see of the right's counterattack, how would you advise that they go forward in continuing to advance on these topics?
I no secret, I love AOC, and I think she's doing it better than anyone else. And I think we need to look to her as a model for how to address right-wing attacks, not just on policy, but on people. It's coming back with the fact that people know or maybe like not that they don't know, but facts that make sense. Mm-hmm. So like when AOC says that, like when she explains marginal tax rates in 280 characters, that's genius. That's what we need. That's what people will tune in for. So quick facts, and then brushing off baseless attacks, calling them out and brushing them off without directly addressing them and giving them credibility. I think a really big thing that a lot of like leftist commentators, leftist politicians do is they'll really dig deep into the weeds of like explaining why some insane conspiracy theory is wrong or doesn't apply to them or something like that. And it's so much easier to just go, no, that's crazy, and we all see that's crazy. Here's what the deal is. And like I said, like AOC is doing that better than anyone else. And you know, I think a lot of politicians are looking to her as a model for how to address the right, because it works. That's why she's so popular. That's why, as a, you know, she's 29. She's a brand new congresswoman, and she has more say now over the direction of the Democratic Party, I think, than anyone else in the party. Like besides like the party leaders, who are, I think, losing a lot of power because they are not good at communicating their ideas and sort of like telegraphing the real problems with the right that the right is trying to pin on the left.
And thank God. I want to ask you about something we talked about in our first block, and that was a poll showing that 40% of Republican Trump supporters say that he has literally never lied before. And I bring this up because you were talking about sort of the futility of constant fact checking. Are you surprised to find out that almost half of his base thinks that he is physically incapable of lying?
God, not at all. And that's really frustrating. I've literally had conversations with Trump supporters where I will ask, name one thing that he's done wrong. Name one thing that he's that is bad about him. And the only answer I've ever consistently gotten that in any way like puts any kind of blame on him is that he hires the wrong people. Mm-hmm. or the people he hired turn out to be bad. And it's
That's a criticism
not
of
at
him.
All. Exactly. So it's not crazy to me, but it is, you know, at this point I think we fully understand the idea that it is a cult of personality that has no basis in fact, because anytime you bring just obvious, direct, indisputable facts, they're brushed off, like they're loudly brushed off. And it's not surprising to me at all that you know, the fact that he lies nonstop isn't reflected in a significant portion of his base. And on top of that, I saw a poll, I think the other day, that something like the same amount, like 40% of Trump supporters, if it turned out that he had colluded with Russia and he was a traitor to the United States, should he be impeached? And they were like, no, of course not. And that's the thing. It doesn't have any kind of like basis in reality. It doesn't have any basis in the way we think of politics. So it's totally unsurprising and it's frustrating. And I think now that we have a better sense of what we're up against, like both as a country and as the left, you know, I think we kind of had this like disbelief in that people could be this way. And I think we get it now. And I think that's a big part of our strategy now.
So if the control room could get ready with the last graphic for this section, I feel like we've been sort of BSing around talking about nonsense news. I want to turn now to the most important topic of the day, and that is we know that Donald Trump has ruined a lot of things in his time as president. Well, now I think that he has gone too far, because earlier today, in attempting to get some praise for good economic news, he tweeted, "The Gallup poll just announced that 69% of our great citizens expect their finances to improve next year, a 16-year high. Nice." Thereby ruining the response on Twitter of nice to every reference to 69 on Twitter. As a person who dwells in this sort of world on social media, do you think that you'll be able to recover?
No, I think this is the end of nice. I think like many of the things he has touched and just destroyed through like bullish, anything associated with him now is broken. Mm-hmm. And for nice to be taken away from us, I mean, he's done a lot of bad things, but this is, you know, top 2000. This is in the top 2000 terrible things that he's done.
This is why we can't have nice things.
Oh, wow. Did you put that up as a heading? Because that's good.
What is the, I didn't see it actually. I missed so much in the live
really
show.
Good.
Yeah. Well, Jules, thank you as always for joining us. Always good to have you on. Congratulations on the new job. I know it's not announced. We'll do that hopefully the next time that you're on, but always good to see good news happen to good people. So thank you again for joining us.
Thank you.
We're going to be back after just a little break. Tiny bit more news for you after this. Earlier this week, Donald Trump tweeted that he perhaps works more than any other president. We have more evidence of how true that is when it was reported today that President Trump has installed a room-sized golf simulator game at the White House, which allows him to play virtual rounds at courses all over the world by hitting a ball into a large video screen. That system replaced an older, less sophisticated golf simulator that had been installed under President Obama, according to two people with knowledge of the previous system. The one that Obama installed has been described as not very impressive, but I guess the technology has evolved over time. That system, by the way, cost $50,000. Damn, rich people have a lot of money.
So it's another extra thing, you know. Obama installed a golf simulator, but Trump has to come and be like, I installed a better golf system simulator. It's a room sized, and I can go and golf in anywhere in the world. I do it better. But somehow he works harder than Obama as well. Somehow you read more. Somehow everything is better under you, including your leisure time, which has been advanced even further. I wonder if this is part of his executive time too?
I would assume so. That actually, you just reminded me of when he was like, they say I watch a lot of TV. I don't watch a lot of TV as president. I don't have time to watch TV. And I replaced that little TV that Barack Obama had with a really big one. It's awesome, and it's right there in the room where I'm at all the time. He has to undercut himself, but he does, man, that dude does like golf. He's played golf 139 times as president. It might be higher. It's hard to know because he refuses to admit when he's playing golf, but that's what the Washington Post has logged. I haven't played any sport 139 times in my entire life, I don't think. And he's done it in 2 years, basically.
We can challenge you on volleyball with that.
Maybe.
John, if Iderola was president, a volleyball simulator would be installed into a room in the White House where you can spike it against the wall and it'll tell him if he hits one in the head.
Is that a thing? Because that actually sounds, why would that not work in the same exact, that's awesome. That would be great. Just to put it in historical context, Dwight Eisenhower put in a putting green, Richard Nixon added a bowling alley, and I would like to assume that someday if AOC becomes president, she will put it in an esports arena where people can play Super Smash Brothers, which would be awesome. Anyway, the reason I bring this up is because obviously it's ridiculous that he's spending so much money to put in this golf simulator. But some people report that and not say that Barack Obama also had a simulator. But I'm going to go one step farther and say it's not necessarily hypocritical to have more of a problem with Trump having it, because does anybody really believe that of all the problems we would list of Barack Obama's presidency, and we could put together an extensive list, is that he wasn't working enough, that he was just like lazy and hanging around? Does anyone think that? Donald Trump spends 50 to 60% of every day in executive time. And do you really think that he can resist the allure of that massive screen? I can't work at home because I will start playing Fortnite immediately. And I think I actually have self-control. Donald Trump, look at his waistline. He does not, okay?
Exactly, no, that's the thing. But you know, there was criticisms of Obama's vacation times and how much he played golf when he was in office. And it was a direct comparison to W, and it wasn't comparable. Mm-hmm. Keep it real. So when you have that issue with someone's amount of time playing golf and it didn't actually compare to the last person that you actually supported, then his predecessor also, then Trump comes in and does the same thing, yeah, actually at a higher rate. And you, again, don't have a problem with it, mm-hmm, we're beginning to see where your hypocrisy comes into play. Because, yeah, sure, we can, if you want to criticize the amount of times Obama played golf, cool. Mm-hmm. But
he
go
did.
Ahead and, yeah, and go ahead and criticize them all because we can talk about the larger numbers. And do you believe that presidents should never play golf?
Yeah.
Or there should be zero leisure time? That's the question. I'm not saying Trump needs to be working 24/7. Mm-hmm. I'm saying he needs to be working one hour a day, one day a week, yeah, at least.
Yeah, and look, Barack Obama did play a lot of golf, and Trump attacked him constantly for it, and then went on to say multiple times, I will not play as much golf. And then he goes and plays golf. Okay, don't set up standards for yourself if you can't match it. That's all
it's
I'm
all,
saying.
It's all.
Anyway, thank you, as always, for joining us. Great to have you on the show. Thank you for watching, everybody. We'll be back tomorrow with much more for you. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.